specialist for people with visual impairment. There right now, as far as I know, are only two of us in the state of Indiana. That would be myself and Bill Powell. But they're always looking for more. I've been an AT specialist since 2003. I've been with Easter Seals Crossroads almost that entire time. Before going to Easter Seals Crossroads, I worked independently doing training for people that were using ZoomText or JAWS. I actually went to Freedom Scientific in 2003 to get certified as a JAWS trainer. And since that time, I became certified as a ZoomText trainer, several different things. I don't even know what all, to be honest with you. But for those of you that are not familiar with Easter Seals Crossroads, part of what we do in the assistive technology department is we kind of have two divisions. We have a clinical, what we call clinical team, and then we have our Endata team. Has everybody in this room heard of Endata?
I don't think so.
Okay, well then, let me take a minute to tell you about Endata. Endata stands for Indiana Assistive Technology Act, and that is actually a grant-funded program that we have had. I should know exactly how long, but I don't. But I'm going to say going on maybe 9 years we've had that grant.
I've got you on Facebook, so I'm not here.
Okay. So the purpose of that grant is to make people aware of assistive technology and also do demonstrations and presentations. In fact, when I was asked to be here today, I kind of questioned whether it should be myself or whether it should be someone from Endata, because they do this kind of stuff all the time. As part of the Endata grant, we also have over 2,500 devices in what we call our lending library. And anybody in the state of Indiana is eligible to borrow devices from that lending library. All of the devices are available. I should say that the library list is available online for you to look through and see what is available. Also, they are continually adding devices to that library. So if, for example, you hear about a device or see a device that you would like more information on, but you don't find it in our current inventory or their current inventory, if you contact them and let them know what that device is and they see a great need for it, then they can go ahead and try to add it to the library. So Endata also takes donated computers from anybody who has an old computer that they don't use anymore, and they refurbish those computers and then reissue them at no charge to, again, anybody in the state of Indiana that doesn't have any other funding source. Now, as part of that, they cannot include any like JAWS or ZoomText because that would cost them money. The idea is for them to do this as at a low cost. Sometimes they will spend money to like maybe put more RAM in or something like that. So they take donated computers, refurbish them, and then reissue them. That's one of the biggest things that they stay very busy doing. They also use volunteers to help get those computers refurbished and ready to go back out the door. They also have a partnership with Star Financial, so that if you need a piece of assistive technology and you can't afford to purchase it and you don't have any other funding source to help you get that, you can apply for a loan through Star Financial. Now, you would have to apply and get approved just as anyone else would, but the advantage is they do it at a very, very low, very low interest rate, and they can sometimes extend those payments. So if that's something that you would be interested in, then Endata would be where you would want to go to get more information about that. If you call Star Financial, they're just going to direct you right back to Endata because there's paperwork that has to be done to get that through, I guess. Then as part of their awareness, we have several different podcasts that we do. Assistive Technology Update, the ATFAQ podcast, which is the one that I'm on, and then we also do tech tips. Once a week, we post on YouTube a tech tip on some something. It might be a device or it might be a program that we've learned about or heard about. And it's just usually a 2 or 3 minute little clip on a device. But that's, if you're interested in knowing about something that you've heard about, that might be a good way to get more information on it. All of that information can be found at EasterSealsTech.com.
Excuse me, Mayla?
Yes.
Do you know if Ohio has anything like that?
Every state does, and if you want to know how to get in touch, now it might not be called Indata, because keep in mind, we named Indata because it's the Indiana Assistive Technology Act. So
yeah, I understand.
Each state has an assistive technology grant that you can find who, what the name of it is and who to contact for your state. If you go to our website and put in your state and assistive technology in the search box, it'll help you find.
Okay, now the website is
EasterSealsTech.com.
Okay.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And anyone, please do what she did. If you have a question, let me, just don't wait for me to stop talking. Just spit it out. It gives me a chance to take a break.
Can you see for ratings or not?
I can.
Okay.
Yes, I can.
All right.
So one other thing I was going to say, too, that I was going to talk about, too, is we are also partnered with the Perkins School for the Blind, and we provide the services for the I Can Connect program. Has everyone in the room heard of that program, or has
no one
heard of it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I Can Connect provides technology and training for individuals that are both visually and hearing impaired. Now, that does not mean that you have to be totally blind and totally deaf, but you do have to meet certain qualifications. There are also income guidelines that you have to meet. Which they're really easy to meet. We've been doing this 5 years, or 7 years actually now, and we've only had one person who didn't qualify because of income. So if you know someone or you yourself might be both visually and hearing impaired and are interested in distance communication equipment, then again, contact myself, or you can go to the ICANconnect.org website and it will direct you back to me. Yes.
Were they closed down for a while, about 2 years?
Here in Indiana?
No, in Ohio. I Can Connect.
I can't speak for Ohio, honey.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
know. Yeah, I don't know. It was about 2 years ago when we did have about a 60-day delay in doing anything because they were taking the grant from a demonstration type thing to a full blown program.
Oh, that
so that might have been. If
it might have been time because there was a period where no call was ever turned. I figured the program stopped or there was a hiatus or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So try again because they should be back up and going. I mean, we didn't stop taking calls. We didn't stop taking applications. We just let everybody know that we were kind of on hold for a little bit. We knew that the grant was going to come forth and be a full program because we've been able to help some really amazing people.
Marilyn,
yes.
I think Ohio and Cal provide at least some,
yes.
And Columbia Hearing is all part.
Yeah, I just wondered because there were no turn calls. So.
Yeah, it's so. Like she said, it was probably, like you said, I know there was a while, she said they were going from, hey, it's a pilot's try to, really good, I can keep it going.
That's probably what happened.
So I think I remember reading that.
Okay.
So.
And we had another question up here in the front.
Yeah, Marilyn?
Honey, the lady, I don't know your name, but you had your hand up.
I think it's kind of a silly question, but I guess
there are no silly questions.
Specifically, what training is? I'm very curious about learning record software. I didn't know if that was something offered through I Can Connect.
No, that's a good question because it's important to remember I Can Connect stands for I Can Connect distance communication. So it's a way for those individuals that have no other way to be able to communicate with their friends, their family, and the community. It's basically texting, emailing, FaceTime for those who still have enough vision for that, and that type of thing.
Annie, I'll talk here. I've got you.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, another question in the back?
Yeah. Are you calling over me?
Yes.
Okay, here's a question I have. Now, I was going in more into the actual in-depth question of Windows 10. First of all, I do like the start menu and all that, but one thing I do find having trouble with is having answered that is when I get into the Windows App Store.
Okay.
Do you know like how you know how to get around?
Okay, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. Okay.
Okay.
Or as much as we can. So the purpose in today's session is to talk about Windows 10. My first question is, if you are a user of screen magnification, would you raise your hand? All right. And if you are a user of a screen reader, would you raise your hand? Awesome. Awesome. That's what I expected. So with Windows 10, Microsoft has really come a long way with their built-in accessibility features. I know Bill was telling me that he uses both Windows and a Mac. And if any of you have experience with a Mac, you know that the voiceover feature in Mac is amazing.
Yes.
And it really made Windows look bad for a long time, or Microsoft look bad for a long time, because the narrator
yes.
was awful.
Yeah.
And in
was.
Fact, in preparing for
today, not even that good.
No. In fact, in preparing for today, one of the things I did was pulled out my Windows 7 machine and opened up narrator, and it was like, so frustrating. I just, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh, if I'm going to go do this presentation, if it's no better in Windows 10, it's going to be awful. But it is so much better in Windows 10. It's not perfect. It doesn't mean, like with the Mac with VoiceOver, it doesn't mean that you don't need a full-blown screen reader, because you do. But the narrator is good if you have no other screen reader on your computer and you just need to get around to get something done, maybe to install something or something like that. And for those that are using magnification, I am very impressed with the visual enhancements that Windows 10 has introduced. Most of them have been there in the previous versions, but maybe not as robust. But again, does that mean if you're visually impaired, hey, maybe I don't need Zoom Text, I can just get by with the Windows features? Probably not, because there are still areas that it's just not as robust as it needs to be for you to be able to be as productive as you might want to be.
I would say that depends on what needs.
Absolutely.
I the organization, I kind of have no vision at all, but my boss told me that several of the Windows built-in magnifier, it just is perfect, and that's all they need.
And I do have clients where that is the case, where we can get everything they need out of the Windows accessibility features. But it's not a whole bunch of them. It's a small number.
What other question I have? Sorry.
Yes.
With NVDA, of course, I'm a novice JAWS, right? Since I started JAWS with version 3.2 in 98, I'm so used to it on the phone. But I also use NVDA periodically when I need it. And with NVDA, you can get 74 version and get up. Now, of course, with JAWS, that's real. But for narrator, alone, you use the 74 version of Eloquent if you want it.
I don't think so.
I don't think you have that option. And what I'm going to demonstrate later, too, is you'll find that because you don't have that control, that's one of the biggest reasons why it's not an acceptable full-time, we'll call it, screen reader, because there is a lot of, especially on this computer that I'm currently running it on, because I have a lot of stuff on here, there's a lot of lag and the narrator being able to keep up with me. Now, when I open up NVDA or JAWS, I don't have that problem. So again, it's come a long way, and it's good, and kudos to Microsoft. I'm sure it'll continue to get better. They're working very, very hard to make everything more accessible to everyone, I guess. So I'm sure they'll continue to work on that. How many of you are using Windows 10? That's a larger that's a larger number than I expected to see. Does anybody know when Windows 10 was first released?
2 years ago.
You're close. The person who said 2 to 3 years ago, it was actually in 2015. I thought it was longer than that, but I guess I was wrong because I actually looked that up this morning. And then have you guys that are still using Windows 7, have you heard that eventually Microsoft is no longer going to support Windows 7? So you're maybe a little nervous thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to start using Windows 10.
April 2020.
I wish Windows 10 would still have met. instead of those ribbons.
Well, that's not Windows, honey. That's not Windows. That's your office.
Oh, okay. No, never mind.
It actually does in Windows Explorer.
Right.
Oh, does it? Okay.
In Windows Explorer, it does the ribbon. That actually started 8 as well.
Right. Windows 8 was the worst one they ever made.
Ribbons on set.
That's because it's your office that has the ribbon. What version of Office are you using? Are you using Word?
Yes.
Okay, that's Office.
Yeah, speaking of like
WordPad.
Yeah, not WordPad.
Windows 8, Windows Vista, and Windows Mystic Edition.
Yeah, we don't talk. It was that bad.
Yeah.
Windows 1 was that bad.
So for those of you, I'm sorry, I've got a question over here. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and ask this again. This is going to drive me crazy. Okay, I got Windows 10. I got an email. You know, I'm doing Word as my office. And people will send me attachments. I have had several people try to get me through open attachments, and so far nobody's done it.
Okay.
On my computer.
Okay. We'll talk about that because something tells me that that's probably not Windows 10. That's going to go back to which version. First of all, what screen reader you're using and what email program are you using.
I have JAWS and Outlook.
Okay. So see, that doesn't have anything to do with Windows 10. That's all about the version of Outlook and the version of JAWS that you're using. So we'll talk about that.
Quick answer, Shift Tab. Yep. From the bottom, use your left and right. Get it to insert ink anymore.
Nope.
It stopped telling people to use it because it doesn't work.
Right.
So what you do is, guys,
maybe we should let her kind of continue.
Well, that's okay, honey. I don't mind. We can have the group conversation as long as we don't go too far off the path.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a question in the back.
I'm wondering, I have Windows 7, but I'd like to, at some point, I have JAWS 2013.
Okay.
So I have a newer version of JAWS Windows 10.
I'm going to use his phrase. The short answer to that is yes.
And
do you have to absolutely have? No. But are you going to have a better experience with a newer version of JAWS? Absolutely.
And you can pay $90 and get a script into this new program.
So the good news for those that are using Windows 7 and then you're a little afraid to try Windows 10, you can relax at least till 2020 because they're going to continue to support it till 2020, which in computer time is a really long time.
Yeah.
Once they stop supporting it, all it means is they're going to continue with the security updates even after 2020. And the reason that they're going to do that is because that is the most widely used operating system in the world. So if they just stopped doing the security updates, there would be a lot of people freaking out. But if you call them with a question, they're not going to help you. So between now and 2020, grasp yourself and be prepared to go ahead and move up to Windows 10. And then I also want to say at this time that if you missed the free upgrade, because there was a period where they really wanted everybody who was using Windows 7 or the few people that had Windows 8 to go ahead and upgrade to Windows 10 for free. Yeah. That ended, so we all think, but it can still happen. They still have the free Windows 10 upgrade available, just in a different way than what it was before. Now, if you're fortunate, your current computer will be compatible with Windows 10. I'm the unfortunate one. My Windows 7 computer is not compatible for Windows 10.
Yeah.
So what I will have to do is break down and buy a new computer when I'm ready to have Windows 10 at home. But what you will do, before there was a link that you could just activate and it would update you from Windows 7 or 8 to 10, once it verified that you had an authentic copy of Windows 7 or Windows 8, now you have to actually go to Get Windows 10 and download a media creation file to do it. And I don't know if it allows you to test your machine at this point or not. And honestly, unless you're a real big guru, I wouldn't recommend doing that. Computers are so cheap nowadays, I would try to just get a new computer so that everything would be smooth.
Yes, really
I have a question. I have Windows 7 and I tried to upgrade to JAWS 8 and Office 26. Microsoft told me I'd do it. Scientist told us fine. The retailer, complete crap computer. I have So when I go to buy, what specific do I look for to make sure on my money?
There was a time when you had to make sure if you were buying a computer for a screen reader that you had specific spec. That's not true anymore. I mean, pretty much you can go and buy the $300 HP computer at Best Buy and it's going to run your screen reader just fine. And I want to make sure that I understand what you said. You tried to upgrade to JAWS 18 while running Windows 7. Correct?
Yeah, I have Windows 7,
okay.
And I wanted to put JAWS 18 on, and I wanted to put off 2016.
Okay.
But I checked
with
Microsoft, they said fine.
Uh-huh.
I checked them scientific, no problem.
Uh-huh.
The merchant where I bought it, they checked everything, they said problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the complete criteria.
Yeah.
Nothing
else. Yeah.
It could have been Dell computer. That happened to me when I was from
It was an HP.
Well, it could have been the HP. Could have been that computer.
Well, that's why.
You need to look at it this way. It's like any surge risky.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But sometimes there's stuff on your computer already interfere with the office.
Absolutely.
My
suggestion.
Bad turn of events, bad.
So Windows 7 huge problem.
Want to know what should I look for when I go to buy a computer.
My suggestion when you buy it, get the most memory you can afford, the biggest hard drive afford, and if you can get a business computer, you'll have less crap on.
That's the one I have.
That doesn't matter so much.
I know. But
business computers tend to have less bloatware on them.
See, now I agree with everything he just said, but that wouldn't be my recommendation for you because what he just described is going to be a $900 or an $1,100 computer.
But the most you can afford.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You also don't like
but if you can buy a $300 or $400 one, it will do the same
absolutely.
Thing. And
absolutely.
And the newer machines today are, why spend the extra $700 or $800
for home computing?
Exactly.
I agree. If you're doing business, that's a little different. But for home computing, those $300, $400 computers are going to work just fine. In fact, the Google Chromebooks will work just fine.
It wasn't like that 3 or 4 years ago.
No, you're right. Okay.
All right. We need.
Yeah, we're getting too much chatter.
Together.
Okay.
Let me suggest one.
Okay.
You buy new computers, under then on?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that I don't recommend trying to upgrade from 7 to 10 because the nightmare will be there. I promise. Yep. Even if your computer tests and says it's compatible, you will still have a nightmare trying to do that upgrade. It's easier to just go buy a new computer.
I mean, I actually did it. It worked fine on one of my laptops.
And it has worked fine for a lot of people, but not as many as it's caused a problem. Okay, I've got a question over here on the right side.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, how many completely lost? Because I did. I bought a laptop because none of my jobs were too well with internet. Got a new laptop, I couldn't find anything.
Because everything visually with Windows 10 looks different than it did with Windows 7. Everything visually looks different. But I think what I have experienced anyway is if you are already familiar with your screen reader, you can take those same keystrokes that you were using before and get almost all of them to apply, except for Insert A. Well, and not all of them. There are some that just don't work anymore, but the majority of them will. And most, depending upon which screen reader you're using, you can look for the key commands that are there for your new screen reader or your new operating system. Then does everyone know that Microsoft now has an accessibility? I won't say now has. They've had it for a while. But is everyone aware that you can actually call an accessibility hotline with Microsoft?
I've
used them a couple times.
And I have too. I've had a great experience. How about you?
Yes.
Yeah. Fair. I thought I had a spam on it. I thought it was something that happened to me. And I called them on Sunday.
Good. I'm glad you had a good experience. I'm sure it's not true every time, all the time, with everyone, but I've used them twice, and both times had a great experience.
I got a question about Windows Mail.
Okay.
In Windows 10.
Okay.
Okay. In Windows 7, we had Windows Live Mail.
Yep.
And if you were in a Word document, you were composing something, you wanted to send out to the people, you could just go to Send. It would open up Windows Live Mail. And you could send through your email a Word doc, okay? Like if you were in a WordPad, whatever.
or Notepad. Well, when you're in Windows, in the mail program in Windows 10, if you try to do the same thing, it won't let you because it tells you it's not an email program that will do that. So is there an alternative?
Let me make sure I understand your question. So I have a Word document.
Right.
I want to send that Word document from Word.
From Word.
No, he's not trying to send it as an attachment. But when you say from Word that you want to send it, does it ask you if you want to send it as an email attachment?
It just goes, takes you to the mail program. I think it's wanting to send an attachment, but it won't let you. And I asked the Microsoft Help Desk about that, and they said, well, that's just because that Windows 10 mail thing is just a little app, and it's not a full-fledged email program, and it won't let you send the way you use it.
Yeah, so you'd have to share it with sending mail.
And that's what I was about to say, but I would also say, too, that I personally don't teach people to send a Word document via email. I tell them to send it as an attachment. Now, why do I do that? I don't know. Maybe because it works every time.
Okay, so how do you do that?
Well, you've just got to save it and then go to your email program and insert a file.
File, save attachment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, save attachment.
Oh, here's another thing. I have Office 365, and I use Outlook. Whenever I use Outlook, and I'm searching, I have a Gmail, I have an iMac, right? And whenever I'm searching, if I want to get to the mail, like I have a Gmail, it won't find it. It searches and searches and searches. I've spoken to numerous Microsoft people, and they tell me it's a bug or whatever.
But that's not a Microsoft issue. That's a Gmail issue. You're telling me that you're trying to search Gmail.
Right.
That's a Gmail issue. That's not a Microsoft issue. But that's probably why
Outlook.
They're telling
it's
you.
Outlook.
Pardon me?
But I'm using Outlook. Do it.
Because you have your Gmail imported into Outlook?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know, because I use the search in Outlook with Gmail all the time, because I have my Gmail account imported into Outlook, too.
And question.
Okay, got a question over here.
Now, you talked sending email. I never came to the clipboard and then pasted it
in.
Well, you could do that, but that's not really the way that you want to try to send an attachment.
Well,
but yes, you could do that.
I mean, it's a message. Not an I attach all my.
Yeah.
I mean, put them under your email. I mean, a clipboard and paste a message.
Yeah. I mean, I've tried sending from Word before and with different people, different situations, different versions. And sometimes it works and sometimes it don't. It's a hit and miss thing. Why? I don't know. I've never spent time figuring it out because I always just go back to email and send it as an attachment. So real briefly, Office 365. I'm not having a good experience with Office 365 online with JAWS or NVDA or Narrator. But if Office 365 was purchased by you and installed by you, you do have the option to install it as a desktop app, which means then you're not using the online version. You're actually still accessing the application just like you were with the older versions of Office. And when you do that, it's a good experience.
Kind of. It's still inaccessible. Expand. I know Hotkeys with the new that version, but I still think nuts like Office 2000 or whatever. Like
Office 2016 is. Office 2016 is, but Office 365, I'm telling all my people, stay away from it unless you absolutely have to do it.
Here's
and unfortunately, what I'm finding is some businesses, for heaven's sakes only knows why, are deciding that they want to go to Office 365. So right now I have a handful of clients who can't even use their email with their screen reader that they're very experienced at doing because it's inaccessible. And I have spoken with Microsoft about it, and they're telling me that they're working, but it ain't happening fast enough.
Where we're also going stuck is that, at least for the moment, VFOs have sites in there in that the script or draw for Office 16 and below are going to be separated out and they're not going to be developed anymore. Only in JAWS 9, the only scripts they will actually be enhanced are those for Office 65.
Though you can download the script separately.
No. What I'm saying, like your stuff, you have, like I have work 20, probably 2015 from my work. I am told that because of our Vert Exchange server or some god knows what, that I cannot up to anything higher than 20. So Freedom Scientific will no longer be doing any work on JAWS functionality with the Vert work.
So what you got is what you
so
got.
So what you got is what you got. And
but for you in that case, it's okay because it works really well with 2013,
I think what
right?
What they're trying to do with that, though, they broke into a podcast on. They were trying to avoid break script for an older one.
Trying to fix them for the newer version.
For a newer version.
Right. At some point, they have to let go. Really,
but then it caused the, like, Jake and Drag, and caused the people developing those scripts to have to make work. Yeah. And it's a nightmare on that side. I'm really, because I would love to trade to all 65 to have that, but I might. So they're basically, you know, I'm basically, it's a problem with those of the old scripts, they're not going to fix. So, and when stuff breaks, it's going to, you know, it's fine for now, but if they change, those of us stuck on reverse may get very well, you know, very well screwed, for lack of a term.
Right.
So I'm pretty upset out. It certainly made the people who develop UX withdrawals, certainly their life more difficult.
I'm going to go ahead now and, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I'm done.
I'm going to go ahead now and start the Windows Narrator. And you guys, I'm just going to warn you that you're going to hear what I was speaking about when I said there's a little bit of delay. I'm doing it with the hotkeys. Does anybody by chance know what the hotkeys are to start the Windows Narrator from anywhere, anytime? What?
Windows Control, all Control N.
Windows Control Enter.
Windows Control Enter?
Yes. Windows Control Enter.
Taskbar. Oh, yeah. I'm in there. NVDA. Sorry.
So I'm going to turn the volume on my speaker up a little bit, and if it's too loud, you guys can let me know. So with the Narrator on, I'm going to go ahead and go to Internet Explorer. If you've got Windows 10 and you think that you no longer have Internet Explorer, you do. But you have to go to the Start menu to type it in. So I'm just going to press the Windows key.
Cortana, search box, editing. Item described by type here to search.
I kind of like that extra bit of feedback there. You don't get that feedback from JAWS or NVDA, but I kind of like it because now, I mean, it tells me it's an edit box, but this goes a step further and tells me, go ahead and type in what you want to search for.
T. Internet Explorer, desktop app, 1 of 10, selected.
And now I'm going to go ahead and open it because it told me that it was selected.
Internet Explorer, a frame.dll.
Oh,
you are not connected to a network.
I'm sorry, I was.
Tooltip, tap,
so
network. Enter the network security key. Editing. Alt F8 to show password.
Right.
Cancel. Network.
Let's see if I can get into their open network.
Room open signal. Connecting. Unknown key. Microsoft Edge.
I got it.
0% vertically scrolled. Custom. Closing tab. Can't. Internet Explorer dialog. Desktop list. Start window, NT. Geo.microsoft.com tab item. Can't reach this page. Internet Explorer.
All right, I'm not going to waste time with that. We'll come back to
desktop.
That in a minute. I have a document on my desk that's a Word document that's got a table and
Hopes test document.
Stuff like
15
that.
Of 20.
I'm going to go ahead and open
Microsoft
it up.
Word document authors. Jerrica. Document. Word window. Hopes test document. Editing. Zip clinical activity log. Name, MRN. Type of appointment, therapy slash case misspelled grammatical error, MNG slash nurse visit.
So this is a Word document that's got a heading and then a table, and I'm going to enter into the table here in just a minute. All I did to get it to read that, by the way, was just down arrow one time.
5 rows, 6 columns, column header, row 1 of 5, column 6 of 6. Assessments completed.
So did you hear that? 5 rows? It couldn't get that whole thing, and that's what I'm experiencing.
I think,
but
some of it's your speaker powering down.
It's not, though, because that was before I was using the Bluetooth.
Okay.
It's
mind.
Just the delay that I'm finding with this. Yeah. Like, even when I'm moving through the menus, like, I have to go slower for it to be able to keep up with me. But I don't experience that. Well, you'll see, because what I'm going to do after I get done with this is I'll turn on one of the other screen readers and come back. But it did give me full information. It let me know that I was in a table that has 6 columns and whatever rows, and that I was actually in the 6th column. Now, I can also get font information if I want while I'm in this document. So
Libri, bold, size 12, 1 of 9.
So it told me the name of it, which I can't say, but it's the Calibri or whatever. And then it let me know that it was size 12.
How did you do that?
With caps lock F.
Oh, dog. Okay.
Caps lock is like JAWS.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And if I do caps lock R, that's going to just read the entire document from top to bottom. And I was going to do that, but I don't want to wait for it to read the whole thing. So I'm just going to continue to arrow just a little bit.
Of 4, level 1, row 2 of 5, bullet, answer.
So it told me that this was a bulleted item and that it was row 4 of row 5. And again, if I if I do just a left arrow key or a right arrow key, it'll give me the spelling for wherever I am.
Sierra, capital N, November, bullet, capital A, alpha.
I say I'm pretty impressed with that.
Absolutely, right? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it never, narrator never gave
feedback. No,
I'm pretty impressed. I mean, it's sluggish, but...
And I think that a lot of that has to do with my computer, because again, I've got about... probably 8 to 10 different assistive technology software programs on this computer. So I do think that has something to do with some of the sluggishness, but I'm not 100% sure.
The amount of detail that it's getting is way unparalleled we've had before.
Absolutely.
Hey, Bova?
Yes.
Do you remember the combinations to go word by line by line?
Word by word is control, and that's what I was getting ready to do. Okay. Control, and I'm going to move left, so I'll use the left arrow.
For level one. E, echo, screening, hyphen, therapist, end of line, bullet, graphite 1 of 7 level 1, end of line, bullet, PSC 2 of 7 level 1, hyphen, 7, end of line.
That's a standard window command.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you'll find with the narrator, that's what they've done. They've tried to use as many of the standard Windows keys as they possibly can. So that was just a little demonstration of how well, because I'm telling you, narrator with Windows 7 would have never done that.
Not even close.
I mean, I couldn't type a document and even get it to read that document back to me, and that was just straight text. I'm in a table, and I'm able to navigate. And let me show you something else that I found, too, that I thought was pretty impressive. I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to try to misspell.
O-O-C-T. M R space.
So I just misspelled the word, and it told me I misspelled it. So I'm gonna. So I'm gonna put my cursor back in that misspelled word.
Spelled R Romeo.
And I'm gonna press my application key. Everybody knows about their application key, right? Awesome. Yeah. So I'm gonna press my application key.
Menu item. Context menu. Menu. New comment, link, new comment, link, new October, menu item.
There's my misspelled word corrected. So what's if I press enter.
Editing.
Did you just 0%. Say what's your application key?
Start window.
Hopefully you have a keyboard that has an application key, but if you don't, Shift-Tab-10 will do the same thing. But the application key should be located on the right side of your keyboard, hopefully between your Alt and Control.
Yeah.
Yes, I got a question over here.
Shift-10, is that just for narrator? Or,
no, that's it for any computer that maybe doesn't have.
Yeah, my laptop is not.
Okay,
is not.
Yeah. And so what is the application key and why is it important? It's basically the act of doing a right click wherever you are, whether you're in a document or on the desktop or whatever. It gives you the function of a right click. Pardon me? No. That's Windows 7. That's across the board. And it's not just a narrator thing. I mean, it's all the screen reader. Okay. So I'm going to leave that document open, but I'm going to turn off the narrator. I'm going to turn it off the exact same way that I turned it on. Control, Windows, Enter. And it's off. And now I'll open NVDA. How many people are using NVDA?
Yeah.
I have used it. It's a free screen reader. It stands for non-visual desktop
access.
Okay.
Can you get it without that stupid accent?
You can. It depends on. Yeah, you can. Listen, you'll hear.
In Windows 10, it goes away.
Yeah, you're gonna hear mine here in just a second.
Desktop Lisp, NVDA 20 of 21.
I think that's a pretty good voice, but you do have the option to change that.
Yeah.
And I will say, too, that Narrator is another one. I'm sorry, not Narrator. NVDA is another one that years ago, Well, I would stay away from it.
Mm-hmm. You had to. You couldn't have to.
But recently, not so much. I mean, I'm recommending it for a lot of folks nowadays. Because JAWS is what, $1,100? NVDA is free.
Oh.
So I can come up with 1,100 reasons why NVDA is better, right? But if you have a job in an office where you're on a network, the IT people are never going to let you use NVDA.
That's true.
Because it's open source. And it scares IT people to death.
What's that mean, open source?
That means that anybody who feels like they're a programmer can write a line of script and throw it in the program.
It's not controlled.
It's not controlled. And it used to be, too, that if you wanted to use NVDA, you couldn't count on any kind of tech support. That's not the case anymore. Even though the program's free, they do now offer tech support, but it's not free. You have to pay for it. And I don't remember, I apologize, because I don't remember. We just talked about this on the podcast, too. You buy it by, like, the hour. So you can pay for just 1 hour of tech support or 10 hours, whatever. But if you need it and you don't have to, like, have it in advance, you can call them up and pay for your time as you need it.
Now, I got a quick question.
Sure.
I'll make it short. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
The fact that NVDA is open source, does that make it less secure for online banking and online shopping, or does that? Because I do a lot of my stuff.
You know, I don't really feel like it makes it less secure for that kind of stuff, because doesn't that, and I don't know because I'm not a security person, but doesn't that really come down to your security on your computer?
Oh, sure.
I think we got somebody behind you that I think wants to add.
It could get hacked, but there's people that.
But anything can get hacked.
There's people that can file that code.
Right.
That are checking it. It's reasonably. If you're bigger than me, if somebody gets hacked.
Right.
If you're downloading it from.
Or if you have a password, somebody can figure out. That's a much bigger thing than you use. Yet.
Right. So we had a gentleman back here that had his hand up. Go ahead.
He basically covered what I didn't say. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I used to have that concern with open source stuff because I've had for companies that's. For example, Canvas, a thing a lot like Blackboard or other online classes, websites, Canvas is technically open source, but I looked it up, they have very strict security policies where anyone write in and add code reputation, but they're 30 bet that code. Now, it's true, there are some open source things out there that aren't well controlled like that. I personally know the extent to which NVDA is just, I don't have personal NVDA, but I know that just because something's open doesn't get dangerous.
So many people live in
I was getting ready to say that. He made a very good point back there. Linux is an open source operating system, and it's one of the most secure operating systems that there are. So I don't think that we should be too afraid of it, but with that being said, I always tell people, if you are online, you are at risk. Just face it. Like right now with my, and I don't want to get off the topic too much, but like right now with my work cell phone, I am getting so many, what do you call them, phone calls.
Yes.
I won't even answer my phone anymore because they've gotten smart and they're using phone numbers that appear to be in my area. So I just make it all go to my voicemail, and then I go, if it's important, they'll leave me a message. If it's one of those people, they won't.
And also, your
now,
information.
How did you get narrator read one line of time?
Down arrow.
Mine won't do it.
Really?
I'm going to ask a question. Did you have a password to get to your computer?
Do you live alone?
Yeah.
Okay, if you live alone, to not have a password to get into your computer is probably okay.
Is it
if
a
you
laptop?
Live with someone, or you're especially in an office environment, you should have a, in fact, they require you to have a password.
Well, even with my husband's password.
That's fine. But you do want to, okay, let me get your question real quick.
Okay. Is this something that those tend to, when I travel, usually I have to get on hotel hotspot stuff and not secure. Nor is push they call.
Okay.
Where they say they make any public hotspot secure, but Freedom Scientific said extremely not with JAWS.
Okay. I was getting ready to jump from where I was going to security.
Okay.
Because we started talking about that.
Yeah.
Windows 10 has a built-in antivirus program that is good enough. Back in the day, I've never, ever been a fan of Norton. Never. Never. Because it's never been compatible, and it's a resource hog, and it interrupts everything you try to do. And it costs a lot of money. So why have it? I can't tell you how many computers, because part of what I do is set up new computers. And back in the day, especially Dell, wouldn't ship you a computer without it having Norton on it. And the first thing I did is uninstall it.
So what do you rent?
If you've got Windows 10, the Windows Defender that's included with Windows 10 is good enough.
That's pretty much the same thing.
It's the same thing.
Isn't that a hotel hotspot that makes it secure?
No.
No.
No hotspot is secure. Okay.
No.
Says theirs makes it secure.
But well, it's inaccessible.
Does Windows 10 have something that's like that successful included? They said that
when you're using a hotspot, basically what you're doing, and I'm not an IT person, so if I've got IT people in here that want to correct me, please feel free.
If you connect to the hotel internet.
Okay, that's an open Wi-Fi.
Okay.
An open Wi-Fi, that means anybody, anywhere can get in.
But Norton says they have this thing, you go through a tunnel, they encrypt it, and it goes back out.
Okay.
I want the security, but I can't use it. Is Microsoft Windows 10?
No.
Okay.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
I don't recommend using open Wi-Fis, which is what I just tried to connect my computer to, and it still didn't connect to it. And I'm sure that there's probably something in my security on my computer that's not letting that happen, which is why I had it connected to my phone a while ago. But I don't recommend any open Wi-Fi.
So you think phone hotspot secure?
If it's your phone,
uh-huh.
Yes, and for short time.
Okay.
Not to stay connected to all the time.
Okay.
And you don't want to leave your phone hotspot on all the time, because that means anybody else can see it too. And again, it's about password, password, password.
Okay.
You want to, when you're getting into something that doesn't have a password, it can't be too secure. Okay. A question in the back.
Yeah, I manage IT, so I.
There you go.
Spent several security workshop course. What the lady up front talked about product called the. And there's various companies that offer this.
Now, VPN's different,
yeah. So if you establish and connect over a Wi-Fi feed, okay.
Secure, because
essentially what it's doing is connecting with a remote server, establish or communicate between the encryption.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what other open vulnerable spot you're going, as long as end-to-end you have encryption.
And VPN stands for private network, correct?
Virtual
private network.
Yes.
Any other thing I would say, the highest, if you get like a router, a lot of those routers have their own private password.
When I'm talking about when I'm traveling.
I personally would change to a personal password, because even if like in that gear or whatever has one password, if you use those, it might be easier to figure it out. So I would myself.
Yeah.
Can I make another reference? You're talking about password. I wondered if you could speak to password. I personally have a vault.
Yeah.
Store all my personal.
Yeah.
And it all includes as part of the.
Which one are you using?
Yeah. It's $50.
I didn't know Dashlane had that.
Dashlink? I don't even think I've ever heard of that one.
Dashlane.
Huh. Yeah. Oh, Dashlane.
L-A-N-E.
Okay, yes, I have heard of that one.
That solves the problem with that one.
Yes, because what he's speaking of is a password vault will not only help so that you don't have to remember all your different passwords, because hopefully you're not using the same password for everything, which I do see very, very commonly. But it will store those passwords for you and automatically populate them. And most of them will automatically create the password for you. However, my experience with that has not been so good. So that's a risk that you take if you allow it to do it for you. And most of them, there is a yearly fee that's not very expensive, and it's a very good idea to do that if you travel a lot, especially.
So is there some like Norton to make hotel hotspots accessible or safe that is?
I don't know.
I would check out that.
Okay.
It's got a very simple interface.
What I personally do, rather than have all the passwords, I have one or two passwords, but it's basically 13 and 9 characters. We're counting lowercase numbers.
And that's great. But the problem is, if a person gets your password, what all are they going to have access to? That's what you have to ask yourself. Okay, we had a question over here. The gentleman in the suit.
I've got an idea.
Okay. And everybody has their own opinion. And please know, that was my opinion. If you want to purchase an antivirus program, no. No. We have it on probably over 60 computers at Crossroads. I personally have it on my computer. I can't tell you how many clients I have that are using it, and I've not had any issues. None. So that's just my opinion, my experience. But please know, if you are online, it doesn't matter what antivirus program you're using, you do run that risk. Because that's the way it is.
And okay. The other thing is, even if you're going to have an antivirus, for me, really, I have a VAS, very accessible, but at the same time, you might want anti-spyware.
Okay, now you just said you have AVAS, yes. And he just said he heard that someone he knows says that Defender isn't doing it. AVAS just got cracked, what, about 8 months ago? Mm-hmm. They had a huge security flaw. Wow. Yeah, so that's all I'm saying. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
I was going to add, and I know this is a problem, so I mean, I haven't used it in a long time, but I kind of stuck a screen reader user. You know, you go to a website, a flat and stuff, kind of falls down screen reader, and you actually hit enter on ad. I know that's happened, but.
Oh, sure.
Man,
right. Absolutely. Okay, last question.
I was going to say, now, like, I use the same password for the HCB.
Okay.
Is that
no.
None of those have anything to do with money.
No, but yes. I mean, those are the kind of websites that I can't get into with your password and cause you any harm. So is it okay? Yeah. But do I recommend using the same password more than once? No, I don't. Okay, well, I said last question, but you got it.
Can you tell me anything about Mod32? Is it accessible? Are people using it nowadays?
Mod32 is what GW Micro used to really be big on because they said it was accessible. I don't know of anyone who is currently using Nod32, so I can't speak to it.
Yeah, I'm about canceled my trip for it. It's gotten worse.
Okay.
I knew it was accessible
for a short period of time. It was.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
All right, so I'm going to bring that same document back up now with the NVDA.
Test document Word. Row 2, October.
I'm going to get back up to the top of the document so I can kind of just come back down.
Clinical activity log. Name, MRN. Type of appointment, therapy / case spelling error, MNG./ nurse visit.
No hesitation whatsoever. And I want you to know that I downloaded NVDA, installed it, and did nothing to the configuration. So this is like from the web to my desktop, the way that it's behaving.
And that's the great thing about Windows 10. If you need to install Windows 10, you automatically get that really nice sounding voice.
Yes.
In the latest version says, oh, I'm on Windows 10, I'm going to snazzy voice right here. It's part of Windows 10.
Yes.
That's another reason really nice about Windows 10.
Yep.
With Windows 7, still pretty nice that I've learned to get to and everybody else.
And for home bakers, I'm telling you, there's, in my opinion, there is no reason why you need to worry about buying JAWS. There really isn't, because anything that JAWS can do, NVDA can do, truly. I remember when JAWS came out with OCR. Everybody knows what the convenient OCR is, right? When they came out with that, I thought, oh, there we go. That's a reason why JAWS is so much better than NVDA. Well, now NVDA came out with it, like, right behind them. So it's like everything that they work very hard to do, NVDA is right. And sometimes NVDA is the leader. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they'll come out with a feature before Freedom does, and then they have to try to catch up. I have plenty of clients that use both because one works really well in one program and one works really well in another program.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think the power that we have with our Windows 10 start menu is unbeatable. Why? Because I don't really have to worry about where anything's at on my computer. As long as I can press that Windows key and type in the name, I can get to it. Absolutely, but not as powerful as Windows 10. Not as powerful as Windows 10, in my opinion. Yes, back here in the back.
Is the search case? Because I'm finding that I can improve unless I type it, but it doesn't find it.
Now, that's interesting because I haven't had that experience. Has anybody else had that experience?
I've not.
No.
Yeah.
The one thing I feel like Windows 10, the only thing I feel like Edge is a good browser, but still I feel kind of broke for accessibility. More and more coming, but I feel that, you know, it's not there. It's not primary. Yeah.
When I first started telling my clients, Windows 10 is okay. Trust me, it's okay. I also in that same breath was saying, but now Edge, it's a different situation. But the good news is we still have Internet Explorer and we still have the ability to use Firefox or Google Chrome, either any of those.
I found Chrome, to be honest, to be the best Windows 10 and Firefox is best.
And then Edge has gotten better. Uh-huh. It has gotten way better. But I still feel comfortable with Internet Explorer. But we were having a discussion at the beginning before everyone showed up. There are websites now that you can't get to with Internet Explorer. They right. just simply won't let you in.
Like Amazon's perfect example. You can get there, but certain things don't work. And in fact, Chrome and Firefox work.
Okay, question in the back.
Oh, I'm going to ask. So maybe you would know. I tried. So Zilla used to be accessible to ours.
Yeah, but they did an upgrade that kind of
quantum. Yeah, and I was going to ask. So you can you go back to the? I think they were recommending. So quantum has accessibility. The accessibility is beat that is baked in. So even if you don't have screen reader running your accessibility mode, your lag or your everything lagging tight enough.
There was an update I think in July of last that fixed Firefox.
No,
it's still broken.
Like, you take 10 minutes to type stuff in.
I think you go back to 52, I think the word is, just tough to update.
There's a lot that goes into how broken it is. Again.
So what's a good browser?
I would say Chrome.
But Chrome has problems,
so
too.
Again, I think there is no one perfect browser, okay?
It used to be Mozilla and Internet.
I think that in most cases, you need to be experienced and fluent with both. Two, anyway, if not three, but at least two.
I heard Firefox was so good.
Well, Firefox was really good, but they broke themselves. They broke themselves with their updates, but they are working to fix that. And I did hear a podcast not too long ago where they were saying that, yes, they know that they still have some areas that they've got to improve on, but a lot of the issues that they were experiencing, they have already fixed. My opinion, Internet Explorer, even though there are websites that are saying it's too outdated for me to use. Okay. But, and with that being said, there's no reason why you can't use Edge now. Edge is accessible now. It's a little different. For example, I couldn't get Alt-D to take me to the address bar. Can anybody get Alt-D to take him to the address bar with Jaws?
Control L.
With Edge?
Yeah, draw out.
Control L.
No.
Oh, okay, well, there we go then. That's one of the keystrokes, I guess, that used to work that don't work anymore. So where does Control L come from? Where did they...
Location bar.
It's common across...
And you can copy links from that.
Yeah.
You
okay.
can't copy links control up.
But one thing I would like to specify, I don't know, even though Internet Explorer is good in certain areas, but Microsoft is going to stop supporting that at 2020.
Absolutely. But by
closes the window.
But by 2020,
next summer
by 2020, Edge will be perfect.